Good morning. My name is Michael McCusker. Donald Trump is about to be sworn in as president of the USA for a second term. God help us. The worst president in American history is about to once again disgrace democracy by tarnishing the White House with his empirical, corrupt dishonesty and tyranny. I imagined on an earlier program following a presidential election what sort of president I should be were I elected to the White House. It might yet be currently relevant as a countervailing premise to the huge error of reelecting Trump as president, a grievous reality about to be a political holocaust consuming our tottering democracy as lethal as the fires burning Southern California. I call it, If I Were President. And a quote by Meg Greenfield, 90% of politics is deciding whom to blame. The USA is at a crossroads as severe and consequential as the Civil War, a crisis of liberty, power, and wealth that will determine our future as a nation and society, either as a corporate monetary plutocracy administered by corrupted and questionably elected figureheads, or an open society as envisioned in its most fundamental beliefs and laws, and perhaps also as a leading member of a world confederacy of presumably eventual democracies. Civil liberties are dramatically threatened, while average citizens are rendered impotent. Most citizens and their communities have been undeservedly ravaged by economic disaster and are affected every day by the consequences. Millions of jobs are liquidated. Equal numbers of homes are foreclosed, while necessary social services are purged because tax money is diverted toward egregious wars and bailouts of perpetrators of financial debacle. The USA is a Yankee Doodle come lately, yet we stridently brag we are the primo democracy that everyone else should emulate, the exceptionalist nation. In truth, we the people seem to be little more than cash conduits for banks, quote, too politically connected to fail, unquote, whose financial policies paradoxically decimate prospects of even a decent living for the average citizen whose taxes bail them out. One might regard the involuntary and undemocratic bailout of corrupt banks by American taxpayers as a contemptible theft of the public trust. If anyone looks closely enough and connects the dots, they would probably discover the radical kleptocult of financial speculation, corruption, and fraud that brought the nation's economy to financial collapse, which impoverished and made jobless and homeless millions of Americans quite recently. Even more ironically cruel is the fact the corrupt fiscal gamblers have made trillions from the ruinous debacle they originated. The dismal hypocrisy is what a friend used to call socialism for the rich, capitalism for the poor. The public treasury is exhausted to maintain not only the vast wealth of those who have shattered the family finances of a majority of Americans, but to also subsidize further criminal financial behavior that will lead to more economic disaster. The people who could really use their own money for basics such as food, housing, and health care, especially the millions rendered destitute from job loss and home foreclosure caused by recession, depression, are instead caught in a circular process of propping up mega wealthy banks, gambler financiers, corporations, and individuals who seem to think they can plunder the public purse forever. With a few rare exceptions, it is astonishing the poor quality of presidential candidates that are filtered through the political process to represent a nation of 400 million citizens, all of whom theoretically have a chance of being president. As the power of the presidency increases, the quality has proportionately declined. LaDonna Harris, who was a vice presidential candidate, she ran on a third-party ticket with the deceased Barry Commoner, marvelous name for a candidate, expressed the lack of noteworthy candidates when she said that American elections are not based on the choice of the lesser of two evils, but instead upon the banal evil of two lessers. This past election year's entertainment has seldom reached above the belt and never above the neck. The public dialogue has from the start been little more than competing penises, however different the creed or color of the candidates, and a woman candidate also. Inflaming passions and prejudices are regarded as essential to gain popular political support, and grim hatreds and intolerance are recklessly incited. Intelligence and reason are normally the first casualties of the electoral process. So-called political mandates by victors to the contrary, one of the essential rights and responsibilities of American citizens, and the watchdog, and that's a quote, media, is to openly question and, if necessary, criticize and oppose policies and uses of authority by presidents, in particular, those who involve this nation in war. It might be said that true treasonous behavior is to remain quiet and submissive to policies and abuses of authority that catastrophically imperil or undermine the basic principles and fabric of constitutional democracy. And it might also be construed as equivalent to treasonous behavior if a president were to consistently deceive and arrogantly disregard the majority opinions of the American people. I suppose if I were president, I would agree with Harry Truman that the only real power of the presidency should be to convince people what they ought to have the good sense to do on their own. If I were president, among the first items I want to begin rectifying the moment after I swear, so help me God, at the inauguration, I most assuredly would not add God bless America to my already compromised soul, is to immediately abolish voter restriction laws and every other attempt to reduce voter eligibility. Voter fraud is hardly a problem. The real fraud is the specious argument to repress voting, which strikes at the core of democratic human rights and the franchise to choose leaders and representatives without censure or harassment. If I were president, I would make every effort to put an end to the immense power of the finance industry, which seems to be the only true winner of the world economic collapse it precipitates. Post-Depression sanctions following the crash of 1929 must be put back in place, such as Glass-Steagall, which divorces savings banks from high-risk investment banks. Up to the nanosecond regulations must fit the ever-twisting nature of financial surrealism. If I were president, the persons and financial firms who fostered the collapse would be held answerable by law and accounting for their avaricious crimes. Not only would they stand trial, their fortunes would be equally at risk, so that neither individuals nor institutions profit from illegal financial activities or speculations. No one is above the law, certainly not Wall Street bankers and stock speculators. Punishment is not simply legal revenge, but also prevention. If I were president, I would rather give a dollar for the welfare of the poor than another cent to the plutocrats who generally bankrupt the nation and pillage the public treasury to cover their losses. The twin rubrics of corporate research and development and national defense security account for the majority of corporate welfare. Because of what President Eisenhower admitted to be a military-industrial control of the nation's politics and economy, we are more insecure politically and psychologically than any time previously. Much of the nation's poverty is a result of the very few controlling almost all of the nation's wealth and resources, with little sense of responsibility for having nullified our constitutional democracy and limiting the prospects of its people, and whose obviously unethical avarice causes financial meltdown. It is necessary to redistribute the purloined wealth of banks and corporations among those whose lives have been crushed by the Great Recession, those who have lost their homes, their jobs, their pensions, not to mention the schools and programs helping the destitute that are being ravaged by shrinking budgets due in substantial part to taxpayer bailouts. I agree with almost forgotten Adlai Stevenson, whose distinct and persistent belief was in the absolute need of idealism and universal suffrage, that people come before property and profit, that the case for democracy rests on what is good for people and what people are good for, quote, and unquote. For him, a world safe for democracy was a world safe for people. If I were president, I would end the malign neglect of the huge and growing underclass that lives abandoned and without hope in our crumbling inner cities and impoverished rural areas. Millions of children live in poverty in the USA, most of them not white, which significantly lessens their chances of escaping destitution due to this country's prevailing racism. The young gangs in inner cities are a grim specter of the future if we as a society refuse to counteract the inequities we have allowed. Dr. Charles Wilder, former director of Clatsop County Community Action Agency, once said that the war on poverty has become a war on the poor. If I were president, I believe my very first executive order should be to begin reversing the upward flow of the nation's wealth. I would instead make the arid trickle down a flood. The disparities in wealth and living standards undermine our society and threaten civil disorder on a massive scale. If I were president, I would implement Thomas Paine's idea that every 20-year-old citizen of the USA be given a monetary stake, women as well as men, because the very notion of democracy is rooted in the thought that everyone born into it, quote, shall inherit some means of beginning in the world, unquote. This idea should be implemented with the understanding that an adequate amount, say $100,000, keyed to inflation, bequeathed to every young person on their 20th birthday, albeit obvious questions of eligibility, should the already wealthy receive a stake, would go a long way toward eradicating the inequity of opportunity in this country. If I were president, I would raise the national minimum wage as maximally as possible. But that is hardly enough. The legal framework of the American labor movement needs radical change. Political solutions in which workers' rights and union democracy in its broadest sense are guaranteed is crucial to right the imbalance between wealth and equity. Unions must be revitalized and include women and minorities in leadership positions, and they should be given political and legal protections to enable them to negotiate strong labor contracts with foreign and domestic corporations that operate in this country. rebirth of a robust labor movement requires the enfranchisement of women and minorities, plus physically and mentally handicapped workers, and should focus on a social crusade framed as an extension of American democracy, in a sense, recreating a social justice movement like civil rights of the 1960s. Reestablishment of a genuine union culture in the United States and radical reforms of labor laws should be a primary goal of the next president, for the good reason that labor and production are at the head of economic and political health and survival. If I were president, I would drastically reform the tax system in favor of the taxpayer, first guaranteeing each an accounting for their money used by every level of government, and that basic returns for that money be automatic priorities such as food, shelter, and health care. The present system of required payment of taxes without any accountability for their use by government must be reversed, which is possible with computerization of all public agencies. It will eventually be possible in such a system that taxpayers have the legal power to determine how and where their tax monies are spent. If I were president, I would change the entire national debt to financial and corporate conglomerates that not only owe billions of dollars in back taxes, but have received huge refunds of public money for taxes they never paid. This responsibility would be personally that of CEOs, executive corporate managers, and prime shareholders. The burden has been on the average taxpayer, who receives only the bill but not the profits of the national debt, which has been incurred appropriating non-existent public money to those same corporations. If I were president, I would impose on Congress and the Supreme Court to rescind the concept of a corporation as a person, which corporate America has exploited for all the rights of a person in the USA, but none of the obligations or accountability. If I were president, I would ensure education as a major priority, regardless of other pressing needs. We are a nation face forward to the future, yet contradictorily plunder the futures of our heirs by scrimping on their education, making it too expensive and simultaneously more mediocre. I would upgrade public education at all levels and would especially reinstate nationally the former system of California state universities and make college free, yet scholastically competitive rather than financially as at present. To paraphrase Marx, education ought to be for each according to his, her ability, from all according to common need, quote, unquote. If I were president, I would not support and would immediately veto any bill that allowed private or homeschool forms of education to promote racial and gender supremacy, and especially if they consider themselves training schools for an elite leadership. The prospect of public schools for the poor and private schools home tutoring for the rich raises a specter of the ultimate eradication of democracy. If I were president, I would require appointees to the Supreme Court that they be committed to women's free choice. For some reason, men who abdicate their responsibility for birth control believe they have the right to control a woman's options, which has less to do with concern for the unborn fetus than it does retaining supremacy over women. The hypocrisy is that women have had to make these decisions for thousands of years. Women have been responsible for birth control or forced to be the instruments of euthanasia in regards to unwanted children in the vacuum left by irresponsible men. Abortion at least allows a woman to dispose of a child before it is born. humanity is crowding itself off its own planet. Abortion is a survival mechanism that attempts, consciously or subliminally, to alleviate the ever-increasing ravage of Earth by an overabundant species that seldom practices successful birth control. In the bad old days, children were slaughtered or abandoned when a population overran its resources. Abortion is a more preferable option than an AIDS or Ebola epidemic in stabilizing population growth. Yet abortion causes furious arguments and is such an emotional issue that an ideological civil war is erupting between so-called pro-life and pro-choice forces. If I were president, I would allow all immigrants who wish to be Americans into the country legally. Humanity is cross-pollinating at an incredible rate. The nation's doors should be as open as they were to our ancestors. Yet we build walls to keep most of the rest of the world out. We pilfer most of the planet's resources, yet deny its populations access. Our policies are contradictory, treating the world as a single economy and exporting jobs overseas to underpaid workers, yet deny entree to those same people. If I were president, I would immediately put into effect rigorous environmental laws to stop the poisoning and ravaging of Earth. I would quit subsidizing and protecting major polluters and devastators and instead use that money to pay the wages of those who will have to work at reversing the damage. Millions will probably lose their jobs, and it will be necessary to retrain them for other work, perhaps cleaning up what they were paid to pollute or ravage, regardless of how modest their contributions to the national, global junkyard. Jobs will mean nothing if the air is unfit to breathe and the planet is baked like a pie. In conjunction with what will most likely seem at first draconian environmental ecological measures, if I were president, I would directly fund research and development of alternative sources of energy that were long stifled but are more necessary than ever, such as solar, geothermal, water and wind power, to replace the fossil fuels that have built and maintained our present civilization, but have, as their cost, imperiled life on the planet. I would not restart the nuclear power industry, which continues to claim to be the solution to atmospheric pollution. On the contrary, the nuclear lobby squelched alternative energy development that set back its application for years, and we still need to find a suitable and safe solution to the problem of current nuclear waste. And while I am at it, I would, if I were president, work to authorize state and local governments the power to determine if liquefied natural gas terminals be sited within their boundaries, or that coal for China be shipped on rail lines and through their seaports, since these will have immense cultural and environmental impact. This is a question of basic democracy, the right of the public to be significantly involved in critical local decisions. Incursion of corporate cash register politics into local communities generally includes such iniquities as secret deals, influence peddling, deceptive treatment of a resident populace, intimidation against public resistance, and the corruption of indigenous Quislings. Whether we want it or not, we are pawns in a ruthless worldwide culture war of resource plunder and profit that pits local communities against corporate octopi that are implacably unsympathetic to the concerns of people and places they ravage. If I were president, I would decriminalize illegal drugs, which I believe will dry up the huge profits made by drug lords and significantly curb the massive corruption and violent crime terrorizing this nation. The precedent for this belief is the repeal of prohibition. Hypocrisy is the word for the war on drugs, which selectively prohibits the use of some substances and tolerates the use of others that are as or more dangerous to public health, such as alcohol and tobacco, which have killed millions. The entire society is criminalized and corrupted, while drugs remain illegal and thus immensely profitable. Public officials and financial institutions are purchased by the drug lords, while Congress dismantles the rights of those accused of minor drug use, which incites repressive police practices in general, while ballooning their budgets. Law enforcement is the other profiteer of illegal drugs, and overcrowds prisons with non-criminals. I believe the supply of dangerous and addictive drugs will be considerably less when there is no longer big money made in the trade. If I were president, I would ardently support gun control. Guns escalate crime and violence, disarm cops and criminals both, which remains the tacit covenant in England. Because of guns and depraved social policies, we are an increasingly violent society without much hope of reversal unless we try radical solutions. The delirious old myth that an armed citizenry is a shield against intrusive government does not now, nor has ever had, a shred of truth about it. Disarmament begins at home. If I were president, I would abolish all attempts to nail the biblical Ten Commandments to schoolhouse walls, an insipid symbolic act by self-righteous idiots who have no concept why children are killing each other, and instead put up the real Ten Commandments of democracy, the Bill of Rights, which might give hope and inspiration to alienated youth who might otherwise resort to gunfire. If I were president, I would discard the Electoral College as an antiquated and unfairly tilted and unintentionally corrupt process that resists the brave new world of participatory democracy made possible by the Internet. All of our votes must have the chance to count. This is Michael McCusker. Joanne Rideout is engineer for this program. Every generation of humanity has kindled its own self-imposed horror. Carlos Lozada wrote in the Washington Post during Trump's first term as president, "If Donald Trump did not exist, it would be necessary to prevent him," quote unquote. And to paraphrase a sage or two, things are more like they are now than they ever were.